Hello and welcome to the latest podcast in our series, Living with Diabetes, brought to you by Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. I'm Claire Levy, and in this episode we're looking at a new report about autistic people living with type 1, type 2 and gestational diabetes. The initiative was created by AUTEC, a disability-led community interest company, in partnership with DRWF. This special edition of our podcast coincides with Autism Awareness Month, which takes place every April. We've been speaking to AUTEC director Dr. Steve Bond and a Manchester GP with a special interest in diabetes, Dr. Naresh Kanyamili.
We are at the risk of just not even identifying this population as somebody who would benefit from screening strategies and prevention strategies. I think we need to have an open mind, and I think we should be paying more attention to prevention and identifying these conditions early within people with neurodivergence.
But to get the report out at a time when people are focusing on autism and neurodivergence is hugely important. And for me, and it's sort of building on what Naresh was saying, it's never just autism. It's always autism and something else.
Hear more from our guests coming up next.
Views, information or opinions contained in podcasts do not necessarily represent the opinions, standards or policies of DRWF. The inclusion of details about products or services does not indicate DRWF endorsement of them. The aim of podcasts is to educate and inform, and we endeavour to ensure that the information provided in them is accurate. It's not a substitute for medical or health advice from a healthcare professional who's aware of the facts and circumstances of your individual situation. We always recommend that advice be sought from your GP or diabetes nurse before making any changes to medication or before using any products or services referenced by DRWF. Neither DRWF nor any of its employees or owners shall be held liable or responsible for the accuracy or completeness for any errors or omissions in podcasts or for any damage you may suffer as a result of failing to seek competent medical or health advice from a professional who is familiar with your situation.
Thanks for joining us on the DRWF podcast, Living with Diabetes, and this special edition for Autism Awareness Month. We're going to discuss the recent report produced by AUTEC in partnership with DRWF. I'm delighted to welcome AUTEC's Steve Bond and Dr. Naresh Kanyamili. To start with, I'd like to ask you just to introduce yourselves. And Steve, would you like to go first?
Yeah, sure. Hi. Yes, my name's Steve Bond. I am both autistic and I live with type 2 diabetes. So this is a topic that's very, very close to my heart. I run the social enterprise AUTEC CIC, which aims to provide employment opportunities for disabled filmmakers and animators. And we use our lived experience in the videos we create.
I gather you've got a budgerigar.
Oh, you can hear my budgie singing, can you? Yes, I have a budgerigar, yeah.
What's his name?
He doesn't have a name, actually. I've had so many budgies over the years, over the last 40 years or so, that I've run out of names. So he's blue and he's lovely.
He's just got a number, has he now?
No, just blue.
So, Naresh, Dr. Kanyamili, could you just introduce yourself as well, please?
Hi, thanks, Claire. I'm Naresh Kanyamili. I'm a GP in Manchester. I'm also a community consultant in diabetes at Manchester Royal Infirmary. So I'm actually the chair of the Primary Care Diabetes and Obesity Society. And one of the big things we've been looking at is management of diabetes or supporting people living with diabetes and neurodivergence. I have a daughter who's autistic, and I'm also a director of a charity called the Vision Beyond Autism, which looks at supporting people, young people and children living with autism to have better lives within the community itself rather than sitting in residential homes.
So you've both got lived experience. So yeah, a first question for Steve. Can you just tell us then a bit more about AUTEC?
Yeah, so AUTEC is, it formed around COVID time. And I had a real passion and interest in around employability for autistic people, and the challenges around getting work that is in a field that you're interested in, but also have a special interest and talent. So it's kind of difficult enough getting work, but getting something that you're really into just seemed to be almost impossible. So with COVID, we set up this social enterprise, and the first thing that we did was go out to COVID vaccination centres and create videos and virtual tours to support anxious people getting their COVID vaccine. And our work has just grown from there, just creating a style of video that is accessible for neurodivergent, for disabled people, but also helps them prepare to visit a place or a service.
Can you just explain then why Autech partnered with DRWF then to look at autistic people living with type 1, 2 and gestational diabetes?
Yeah, so I was at the time I was struggling with my diabetes and really couldn't find any help or support to understand what I needed to do, how I needed to change the way that I ate and exercised and lived my life and all of the rest. And there was nothing that was helping me. I have a very it's not unique. There's lots of other people, but I don't feel hunger, so my interoception is quite challenged in some areas. And having that, it doesn't make things easy for me in terms of eating. I eat out of habit. It's the time to eat, or I'm feeling stressed and I put some snacks in my mouth. So I don't eat because of hunger pangs. I went to a support group, and it was useful there. I got some input from it, but it was a very difficult environment for me to stay in terms of sensory areas. So I was looking for people to help, me understand, and for me to support other people in terms of developing that understanding. And we felt that because, accessible videos is a great way of communicating with autistic neurodivergent people, but there was a partnership with a charity supporting Living Well with Diabetes. Got in touch with Sarah, and we had a couple of initial conversations, and then I've been working closely with Sanjay, at least over the last year now, in moving this project forward.
That's really interesting. And we do try, things like this podcast to bring information to people in the way that they would like to hear it. And so working with the charity, what groups of people then did you go ahead and interview?
So, yes, so with funding from DRWF, we set up about a 3-month consultation period where we spoke primarily to neurodivergent people living with diabetes, type 2, type 1, gestational. The majority were type 2, and we spoke to some pre-diabetics as well. So we spoke to about 30, I think it was, in total, and that gave us a really rich picture of all of the different challenges that people face. And as we all know, neurodivergent people are all unique. And so my experiences are absolutely not the same as other people. So it was really interesting to get this much richer view from my perspective of the different challenges people face, from young children having a sickness, being, developing into type 1 diabetes and all of the potentially life-threatening challenges that entailed, through to people like myself, of an older generation who have developed type 2 diabetes in later life. And it was really fascinating looking at all the different aspects of neurodivergence, of autism, that contributed to these challenges. We also spoke to a lot of professionals as well to work out what the what best practice is, if you like, in terms of supporting neurodivergent people living with diabetes.
And the response then to sharing stories by these different audiences, how did that go?
They were really behind it. It's something that doesn't happen often that people take that level of interest and that are really interested in listening to the story, whatever the story is, rather than trying to put it into some research framework or whatever. So we basically just gave people the opportunity, either singly or in small groups, just to talk about diabetes, to talk about topics of diabetes, and to start understanding how that connected to two aspects of neurodivergence. One is the difference in wiring of the brain, if you like, the thing that makes the way that we experience the world different, but also living in a neurotypical world for many, many years leads to all sorts of other complications for neurodivergent people, and that also had impacts on living with diabetes. So we were able to separate those two aspects of it from the conversations we had. But everyone was totally behind what we were doing, really, really keen, not only to share their stories, but also to be involved as the project moves forward.
And so there is a real lack of research to date, and how do you encourage more people to share their experiences?
So we want to take this forward as a formal research project to really understand how to improve communication between healthcare practitioners and autistic people around this particular topic. A lot of it is based on communication and understanding, and framing some of these concepts in ways that neurodivergent people can access, absorb, and then act upon. So we want to take this further into a research project, and we're talking with people at the University of Portsmouth around doing that at the moment. So that's one branch of it. The other thing that we want to do is notwithstanding the research, we want to create some videos that explain in accessible ways all of the different concepts around diabetes, from how their stomach digests food and creates glucose from it, and that goes in and gets absorbed by cells, all of that sort of process, but explaining that in ways that, again, neurodivergent people can understand, connect with, and then make change to their lives.
That's really interesting. So those videos will touch on things like eating habits, food sensitivities, needle phobias, social interaction issues. They'll help to support maybe with their diabetes management, do you think?
And absolutely, yes. It's it's about understanding these things. And once an autistic person understands something at a quite fundamental level, then change is possible. One of the things that a lot of autistic people have is quite strong, what we call monotropic behaviour, which is really focusing on one thing. And if that's diet, it could be just eating the same thing over and over and again. So when I was a child, I had cheese and pickle sandwiches every single day for my lunch. It never, ever changed. And my mum was, bless her, was never going to try and change that for me. So, changing eating habits can be really, really challenging unless you understand why. Mm. And if you understand why, then that is a point where you can make changes in another monotropic way, so you can move into other focused ways. And a focused way, of course, would be around healthy eating and exercise. So it's about changing the mindset in order to do that. And so that's what we're hoping we can create with the videos.
And keep it from not becoming, as you say, you had cheese and pickle every day. I suppose if you get too much information, that then becomes too much. So it's that level of understanding and help, I suppose, to help people to make good changes to health via their diet and exercise.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's about presenting some really complicated information in simple, easy to digest, easy to understand.
Yeah.
Clip of a video, short clips of a video that overall builds up and tell the story.
Mm. So just moving over to you, Naresh, you work with people living with diabetes as a GP with that special interest in diabetes. From your experience, how does an autism diagnosis impact children and adults when they're dealing with a long-term health condition like diabetes?
So I was just reflecting on some of the things that Steve was saying, and I think they're touching points that are so close to my heart, especially when I have a daughter living with autism as well. I think we in GP land have, you know, clinics that look at annual reviews for people living with learning disabilities, but we don't particularly focus really well on the chronic long-term conditions like diabetes. And I think, like Steve was alluding to, it is a difficult situation because the advice and guidance that is there now is almost tailored to the person who's, let's put in inverted commas, normal and able to understand and take in information. And our clinics are set up for more of those type of people. Whereas when you get to people with learning disabilities and autism, we need to be spending more time with them. Because like Steve says, things need to be broken down into simple instructions, let's say, which are easily understandable, and we have to develop visual guides to try and make them understand, because some people have a better visual memory rather than a memory from just listening to people. And I think the other thing that we don't focus very much on, especially with children and young people living with autism, is that prevention strategies. How do we support them from not developing diabetes or pre-diabetes? Or if they have pre-diabetes, how do we prevent them from becoming a person living with diabetes? I think those are essentials. So it is a hard thing, but I think documents such as the one that is being produced now, and having read it, I think is kind of an eye-opener for a lot of us GPs to have a think again when we're seeing somebody with a learning disability or autism. Think beyond their disability, think beyond their condition, and start thinking of them like, if this was somebody within my family, what would I do, you know, to try and give them the best treatment that is available? But how do I translate evidence that they might be better off on these treatments into simple language that they're able to understand? So that's the biggest problem for us. And I think I'm hoping through Primary Care Diabetes and Obesity Society, we will try and make more of the raising awareness for about people with autism and how they also have long-term conditions, and how we should be more patient and try and spend more time with these people to try and get them to understand better how to manage their diabetes.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
You're listening to Living with Diabetes, the DRWF podcast. In this special edition for Autism Awareness Month, we're discussing the recent report we've supported for ALTEC. Our guests today are Dr. Steve Bond, Director at ALTEC, and Dr. Naresh Kanyamili, a Manchester GP with a special interest in diabetes. Naresh, how important is a project like this to educate healthcare professionals on the needs of people with autism and diabetes? And what is the future possibility for signposting these resources when they're available?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we need to be thinking about how do we develop resources for people with autism and learning disabilities. We do that for people without these conditions. And then we think about, okay, how we did a document called Language Matters for how we talk to people who live with diabetes. Maybe something similar should be used as well, using simple words, short sentences, making sure that's understood and reinforced again and again, using visual videos, etc., like Steve was talking about. I think a document like this, actually, sometimes if we can do more about socializing it, may enable us GPs, nurses, etc., and pharmacists who manage multiple long-term conditions, to be able to just give that little bit of an extra time and make a little bit more of an effort when they're trying to explain things around diabetes to the people with autism.
And seeing a patient in a holistic way, I think, and often they may have other long-term conditions or other health issues. So you've got to see the patient in the round, haven't you?
Absolutely. So, again, let's relate to, it's a sad term if I say inverted commas, normal people, when I see them now. What we also tend to do is work in silos. You go see a diabetes specialist, you go see a renal specialist and everything. So we're trying to run clinics where you come in, it's almost like a one-stop shop. And we should do that for people with autism as well, because let's not blame everything that they might have, symptoms, everything on their neurodivergence or autism. Let's look at it beyond that and think, okay, let's talk about this person as a individual and try looking at anything that might be affecting this person and how best we treat them in almost a one-stop setting. Because like Steve will tell you, sometimes people with autism don't want to go to the hospital. They probably are scared. Something would have triggered a situation that they are don't want to be seen in a hospital setting. If that happens, how are we going to cope with that? Is there something we can put in place that we can see them in the community, in their own house and things like that? So there are a lot of things that we need to be thinking about, and we tend to forget that people with autism or learning disabilities also suffer from chronic multiple long-term conditions.
Mm. Is there any evidence around a higher prevalence between neurodivergence and diabetes?
I think looking at the report, I think there was some evidence that the incidence of pre-diabetes is more common in women with neurodivergence and type 2 diabetes in men with neurodivergence. But I think one of the big things is we tend not to look for it, I think, within people with neurodivergence, finding this population as somebody who would benefit from screening strategies and prevention strategies. I think based on what Steve was talking about and my own experience with my daughter, their relationship with food is very motivating. So how do we help them with that? How do we talk about healthy living and exercising and things like that? So I think we need to have an open mind, and I think we should start paying more attention to prevention and identifying these conditions early within people with neurodivergence.
So another question for Steve. World Autism Day was on the 2nd of April, and we've published the report via our website and social media. So how important is it to highlight autism in this way?
Yeah, it's really tricky for me because I don't necessarily highlight autism per se. It's not something that, for me, it's just who I am. It's what I am. A lot of my autism, if you like, is ADHD as well. So I look at neurodivergence as a whole range of different elements rather than specific diagnoses. So sometimes I think of myself as autistic, sometimes as ADHD, sometimes as alexithymic. There's a whole range of words, terms that at a particular time describe better how I am experiencing the world or how I'm experiencing myself. That is quite challenging for me just as a concept. But to get the report out at a time when people are focusing on autism and neurodivergence is hugely important. And for me, and sort of building on what Naresh was saying, it's never just autism. It's always autism and something else. And quite often it's autism and lots of other things. One of the things that Naresh mentioned was anxiety. Autistic anxiety is such a huge driver of every aspect of our lives, including going and interacting with healthcare professionals. It's something that we find horrendously difficult to do, from the telephone call to the journey to there, to the waiting in the waiting room, to, you know, the whole experience just builds up anxiety to the point where you see your GP. In my case, it's, I just want to get out. I mean, I'm just going to answer the GP's questions in a way that I think he or she wants me to answer, so I can get out the door as quickly as possible. And that is my, and I know it's wrong, and I know that's not the purpose of it, but that's where I reach with the anxiety at the time. So I want people to start thinking not about autism, but about autism and something else. In this case, autism and diabetes. That's what the report and the consultation was all about. But it really scared me going through this process just how many other conditions people had, including a lot of, you know, sort of gut related conditions that immediately make this great healthy diet that everyone recommends almost impossible, you know, from IBS and various other conditions like that, is so prevalent with autistic people who live with diabetes as well. It's a really complicated thing, but I want people to think about autism and rather than just autism.
Absolutely. So Naresh, if you're looking to try and mobilise some action with your colleagues in the wider healthcare professional community, as well as through primary care diabetes and obesity, how do you do that? How do you mobilise it?
So what I would do is, for me, the first thing is raising awareness about the condition. And like Steve says, is people with learning disabilities also have other multiple long-term conditions, and diabetes is likely to be one of them. So let's be aware of that. And when we're seeing person with a learning disability or autism, let's investigate, make sure that we're not missing out on things. And just the important thing is, if you're going to do something with these people, like Steve said, create a routine that they understand. Because they take things very literally sometimes. So we need to make sure that when you're talking to them, use simple language and don't use too many words, because they don't want too many words. It can actually cause anxiety for them. They need to be talking in simple terms, small sentences, things like that. And I would also try and make sure that we involve the carers or the people supporting these young people or adolescents or adults with autism as well. Make sure they're well informed as well. And the other thing that I worry about is everybody tends to relate everything to their autism, any change in behavior. Remember, they cannot express any changes in, let's say, osmotic symptoms, like things like somebody can relate, oh, that's their autism, they just like to go to the toilet more often. Well, no, it could be that their diabetes is getting worse. Why don't you think about that as well? So just not relate everything that could be a clinical sign to their autism or their neurodivergence. I think that's a big thing that I want to get across to people. And use technology, but sometimes you need to be careful as well. People with autism might not want to use technology. They might not like finger pricking. They might not like the CGM monitors. So we need to find other ways of dealing with that. So as I always say, technology is not the panacea for diabetes treatment or management. So you need to be sure that this is the right thing for the right person. So there are a lot of things to consider. And I feel that we as a society, and myself as a chair of the Primary Care Diabetes and Obesity Society, have a huge role to play in working with people like Steve and yourselves to just raise more awareness and probably have more sessions in conferences talking about neurodivergence and autism, neurodivergence and multiple long-term conditions, and develop more material that is easily accessible, understandable, and appropriate to their learning needs, that we can then make a difference for these people.
So is there more collaboration we can do, more funding, more resources?
Absolutely. So the more funding we can get, I think, and the more we can shout from the rooftops that the diagnosis, there's a lot more diagnosis of autism. Oh, yes, it's a spectrum. And we need to be able to cope with that varying spectrum and think about how do we meet the needs of different people. Yes, not all GPs can learn it, but perhaps there are GPs with specialist interests who can actually pick up a few tips and learn better on how to deal with different spectrum, people on the different spectrum, and just understand better about how we can manage this. Yes, funding would be invaluable to do this, because we need to get the message out. We need to make materials and videos that actually help healthcare professionals deliver on this.
And do you want to tell us a bit about your charity?
So, yeah, like I said, I have a daughter who was diagnosed with the more severe end of the autistic spectrum. She was non-verbal. So about 13 years ago, we decided we're going to set up a charity, because we didn't want my daughter to be we wanted our daughter to be part of the community. We wanted her to be giving to the committee and be a community and be part of it. So we set up this charity called Vision Beyond Autism, and it's based in Cheshire. And we look after about 13 to 14 young people with autism. And we support them with their school. We support them with their social lives and daily living activities. So my daughter's come on leaps and bounds with a lot of the support that she gets from one-to-one support during the day. And obviously my wife's been actively involved in it, and she also educates me on how to talk to my daughter, because sometimes I use a lot of language and she says, Naresh, you need to chop that down into a little bit. She's not going to understand you. So I'm still learning, but I think we have been successful so far. And like every charity, we always keep looking for funding to try and get this out. So we are hopefully getting them to live in a supported living accommodation so they can actually go for a job, earn a wage, and also contribute to society. That's our plan and vision for our charity.
Really, really good. Is there anything else either of you would like to add?
So I just think that building on what Naresh was saying about the communications, because it's something that sort of triggered with me, is that when you go and see a GP or a healthcare practitioner of any form, you get bombarded with questions. You kind of get it's the way that these people are going to get the knowledge that they want. But you have to realize that for a lot of neurodivergent people, asking a question is making a demand on you. And there are a lot of autistic people who, right up to the pathological demand avoidance part of the spectrum, who react quite strongly to demands being made on you. So questions themselves can be really difficult, and as a means of communication. Something like just tell me your story is a lot easier than, you know, sort of a whole series of questions that aim to get the answer. And the most difficult that I've experienced, mainly through my son, but also my own sort of life, is this horrible technique of asking dual questions. Do you want chocolate ice cream or do you want strawberry ice cream? That kind of sounds like one question, but it gets processed as two questions. And you don't know which question to answer. You don't know whether to answer the chocolate ice cream or the strawberry ice cream question. So some of these things can be really quite subtle. And you need to be able to get in almost inside the mind of the person that you're asking the questions. You need to ask questions. You've kind of got to, you know, making the diagnosis or understand what the needs are. But that whole process of question asking can lead to a lot of confusion and a lot of avoidance, because, you know, pathological demand avoidance, the A in that is avoidance. So when you feel triggered by something like that, you just close up. You just can't answer the question. And it's kind of like I was saying when I'm at the doctor's, avoidance is the primary strategy that I adopt in those situations. So I just thought I'd add that to what you were saying, Naresh, as a means of, you know, sort of breaking down communication.
Absolutely. All these things, I mean, it's pity it's a podcast. I'm just nodding my head so much. I'm going to get neck ache now. So I'm just thinking it's brilliant. I think one of the things, my final comments would be, I think, be empathic. And most of all, be patient. And then think beyond autism when you're dealing with people living with some neurodivergence or learning disability. Think beyond their condition and think about, they do have multiple long-term conditions. So think. That's what I'll say. Be patient, be kind.
Mm. Well, I think that's really interesting. And I'd like to thank you both for joining us. Just wanted to loop back into the conversation about the budgie. Steve, has he gone to sleep now?
He's not gone so long. Naresh is doing his intro bit. I went and put a blanket over him. I think what happens is that he likes the conversation. I spend a lot of time in my office in front of the computer, but it's quiet. And as soon as I start talking to people, maybe it's one of your voices, maybe you, Claire, that he just really loved and started singing along to it.
Oh, I had a budgie I had a blue budgie called Peter. We only ever had the one, so it wasn't Peter 1 or Peter 2. Oh, it was great.
Amazing.
Yeah, lovely creature.
Lovely. Well, thanks again to both of you.
Thank you very much.
I've really enjoyed that conversation.
We'll keep in touch.
Take care. Right. Thanks.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
You're listening to Living with Diabetes, the DRWF podcast. Our thanks to Drs. Steve Bond and Naresh Kanyamili for participating. I hope you found this helpful and informative. You can find the report on our website at drwf.org.uk, where there's lots of guidance and helpful information and details on how to support the charity, together with the latest fundraising events, news and information. This is Claire Levy from Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. Our thanks again to our guests and also to you for listening to this latest edition of Living with Diabetes.
Living with Diabetes is a Blue Aurora media production for DRWF. Copyright 2026, Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. All rights reserved.